This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Digby Jones, former Director General of the Confederation of British Industry, the CBI, and former Trade Minister. On this programme, we're talking business, and we're preparing for Brexit. In this episode, we tackle what could be the trickiest, the most challenging part of life for business after Brexit. And everybody's been talking about the different duties, the different tariffs, what will be allowed, what won't be allowed, and all the big arguments. But actually, today we're going to talk about the real practicality of getting goods in and out of our country. Because just in a few weeks' time, on the 1st of January, there are going to be huge changes at the border. For 40 years, we could just drive with our goods in and out of the country completely freely. And now at the end of transition, there's going to be a whole new regime. There are going to be new systems, new requirements, new paperwork. And there's plenty of noise about that. What does it mean? What's going to happen? Some people are saying there'll be 7,000 port-bound trucks lined up in the motorways of Kent. Some people say, no, if we get the paperwork right, it'll be fine. We're going to hear from Eurotunnel. They've spent millions of pounds putting new checkpoints in at Dover. We're going to hear from a flower importer, a small business that brings in flowers from Holland every day. How's she going to make sure that her business, which has already been hit hard, as so many businesses listening to this will have been, by COVID? And we're going to hear from a man who transports Triumphs, Jaguars, Rolls Royces all across Europe on his specialist trucks, a real niche business which relies totally on getting high-valued goods quickly across the border every day. Welcome to Preparing for Brexit with me, Digby Jones, here on Times Radio. Now, joining me throughout today's programme is Elizabeth de Jong. She's Director of Policy at Logistics UK. That's the trade body for all modes of transport, including hauliers, right the way across the United Kingdom. Elizabeth, hello. Thanks for joining me.
My pleasure.
Now, huge changes are ahead. I referred to it just now about getting those goods across. What in real terms does that look like for a business listening to this?
So to bring it to life, I like to think of it as a brand new supply chain in paperwork that needs to accompany each item which is being sent. So for Great Britain, EU trade, with or without a deal, initially, the checks are going to be for exports only. There's going to be customs procedures as we're coming out of a customs union with the EU. There's going to be safety and security procedures as the UK sought not to seek a waiver on this requirement. And there's going to be phyto and phytosanitary checks on food and food products. Plus, without a trade deal, we may need permits to grant permission to even make a commercial journey to the EU.
Now, you've already lost me. What does phyto and phyto mean?
It means checks to make sure that food or plant products meet the regulatory requirements of the EU.
Oh, thank heavens for that. I thought it was a new Disney movie. And does that mean that they're going to need to get this stuff in advance?
So some of the paperwork needs to be done in advance. Much of the paperwork needs to be done in advance. But at the coalface of that big supply chain in new paperwork is the driver. And they have to carry the output of it. And they're going to be personally affected if the paperwork's not in order. and they're not allowed to make a crossing, or if other people haven't got their paperwork in order, they'll be needing to sit in queues.
So rather than the one-off haulier, the haulier that does this every day, what would they need to do right now, not just before they go?
So there's new systems, there's new pieces of information about those systems, new infrastructure and processes, and there's about 8,000 haulage companies and 200,000 trading businesses all need to be involved in this getting ready. So one of the most important things for you to do now is to seek information. Haulage companies need to check their customers are ready. Trading customers need to check their haulage companies are ready. And there is information out there, not complete yet, but find out as much as you can.
But is there any part of this which someone filling this in and think, oh no, not another form, just because they can? I mean, is there any of that?
A number of the forms are very long indeed. So safety and security declarations have 36 data fields. I'm going to give you just a little flavour now of how many more things you need to take with you on that journey. There's six potential new documents that you'll need to carry. You need an international driving permit, you may need a visa, you'll need a different type of driving licence, you may need a permit called an ECMT permit to show that you're allowed to travel in the EU, green card for your motor insurance, and there's one where you need a GB sticker. No longer will a little thing on your plate do for that. But the biggest changes are all around the customs and safety and security documentation. And for example, most of that is done by the trader, but there's four different processes a trader can use in order to clear customs. And for each of those four different processes, the document and paperwork for each is different. We will get the hang of it because we'll make the same journeys and we'll know what to do. For the 1st of January, it does feel overwhelming.
Well, now let's see how that's put into practice, actually, at our busiest EU port. Half the goods that go from the UK to Europe every day go through Dover. The numbers are quite eye-watering, actually. 1.5 million trucks travel through any one year. That's 4,000 a day. And a delay at any time processing that little lot can lead to a tailback. I'm told it'll be on the M20s, Operation Stack and all of that. I'm amazed it's not on the M6 north of Birmingham, frankly. So I'm joined by John Keefe. He's Director of Public Affairs at Eurotunnel. And John, thank you very much for joining me.
My pleasure. Nice to be here.
Now, the numbers that I just quoted, I mean, they seem extraordinary to me. And I fear that the slightest delay with one of those myriad of forms and regulations that Elizabeth kindly took us through, any one of those and bam, suddenly we're going to get queues everywhere. Is that right? Or is it all sorted already?
It's all being sorted. I think it would be ambitious to say it was all perfectly ready. But we have to remember we've had a couple of goes at this already, because we had the aborted attempts in March and then October 2019 when we were potentially leaving without a deal. So we got ready for those no-deal environments where we would have been trading with the EU on World Trade Organization rules and where everything would have to be controlled in each direction. Things have moved on a lot since then, and the two governments have developed new systems for managing all of that paperwork that Elizabeth was talking about. A lot of it has been put online, so it's now electronic. So there's a reduction in the kind of sheaf of papers that you actually have to carry, down to a simple barcode, or in the way that we've been working with government, into a virtual wallet that will carry the electronic information for you in one place, so that you can then transmit it to either the UK or to the French authorities without even having to go through a physical transaction. So a lot has been done to streamline the process, but the process is as complicated as Elizabeth has outlined. And so everything that's been done since it was defined has been to take it into the sort of the smart border world, where things are done electronically, where control can be done in real time, and where only physical inspection becomes a necessity for a small portion of the traffic. So if all of the paperwork is done right, then the stopping of trucks is a very limited part of the exercise.
How limited is limited?
A handful of percentage, a handful of trucks.
You mean spot checks, you mean?
Spot checks or checks on the basis of questionable information in the paperwork.
In paperwork. So if you've been good, either your office or you yourself, if it's just a one-man band, or your office have got all that paperwork, and I'm relieved to hear that you can do it all in advance and you can put it on the smart stuff. That's great. So you arrive at Dover, you arrive at Eurotunnel, and you do the stuff as you've just said, and with a minimum of fuss, someone says, yeah, your paperwork's fine, I've got it on screen, on your way. If there's something wrong, if someone's not done it, or indeed someone's not bothered at all or whatever, what would happen then?
Well, I think the first one is it's an if. If you've got everything right, and if you are carrying goods that don't need to be inspected, then yes, you'll be able to carry on straight through. Now, in export terms, straight away, there are some goods that absolutely have to be inspected when they arrive in the EU. Typically foodstuffs, and particularly fish, shellfish, seafood products. And they have to go to an authorised testing point. So you could expect, if you're carrying those kind of products, to be diverted to an inspection location.
Is that location in Dover or is it somewhere else?
No, it will be on the EU side in France. If you're carrying foodstuffs, meats, agricultural exports, then you could be inspected on arrival in Coquel, which is where our terminal in France is. And we've built a customs and SPS, so sanitary and phytosanitary control centre there. If I can just go back for a second, the Channel Tunnel works on the principle of juxtaposed borders. So what you do when you arrive on one of our terminals is you go through the country of departure borders, and then you immediately go through the country of arrival border, and then you cross after you've been through both sets of customs and immigration. That was built at a time when we were in the EU, in the customs union, when there were no border controls. And so in order to make it work as smoothly post-transition as it does today, we've had to work to construct a border management process and border inspection facilities that enable trucks to clear the white lines, if you like, of the borders, and then go on to inland inspection sites when they arrive in the destination country.
In Dover, if someone's arrived without their paperwork, do they get as far as through the French and off into France, or are they stopped by the Brits before they get to the French bit, before they get on the train?
We're in Folkestone. The port of Dover are in Dover, and they're doing a very similar thing to us. The points of exit on the short straits, the channel crossings, are the busiest points of exit. All of the road traffic, 90% of the truck-borne freight that goes from between the UK and the EU goes through the short straits, so either through the Port of Dover or through the Channel Tunnel. And that's why the Kent Access Pass has been introduced, to prevent trucks that are not ready getting onto the M20 motorway in Kent and obstructing those trucks that are ready to go through the border. So the process runs, all of the paperwork that Elizabeth was describing earlier on gets uploaded into the two systems, into GVMS, which is the UK government's new customs management system, the Goods Vehicle Movement Service, and into the SI Brexit, which is the French equivalent. So you're uploading your export documents into GVMS and your import documents into SI Brexit. You then go to the government gateway portal for what's called the Check and HGV system, and you confirm in there that you have uploaded all the correct documents.
All right.
That then gives you a Kent Access Permit, because you have done everything and you can go straight through the border without stopping. If you can't get a Kent Access Permit, then you mustn't come to Kent, because you'll just be, you know, wandering around. You won't be able to get into the Channel Tunnel. You won't be able to get into the Port of Dover. You'll have to go and do your paperwork somewhere. And if you get in the way of other traffic, you'll also be subject to a fine of £300 by the police and the motorway authorities.
And so it could be that somebody who can't be bothered comes down, doesn't get the Kent Access Pass, comes down through Kent, gets turned away at the Eurotunnel or at the Port of Dover, and is not only fined £300, but is actually sent back to anywhere in England or Wales or Scotland or Northern Ireland. And that could be a long journey home to the northeast of England if it was that far.
And if they've got a perishable load, they could also lose the load, and therefore their customers will be very, very unhappy with them. So there's a lot of incentive on traders and hauliers to get this right. The hauliers have been working very closely with government and with us to make sure they're our customers, so we're communicating with them all of the time. The concern we all have is that the small traders who don't have knowledge of customs procedures, because they're not trading to third countries overseas, they're only trading with the EU, they're the ones who are going to come unstuck if they don't get ready now.
You seem so well prepared. You seem you've really, really got the act together. But how much does this cost? I mean, this must have cost a fortune.
It has. In round terms, it's cost €47 million. For us so far in infrastructure, in systems, in training. It's not a cheap thing to do, to find the land, build all of the tarmac the land first of all, then build all of the installations, the search bays, the facilities, the offices. All of that takes time and money. The great thing for us in terms of what we can control ourselves on our terminals is we've been able to practice that and to refine the processes, tweak the systems, and be really sure that our bit works.
Well, I wish you well. On the 1st of January, when you find out if it works, I wish you. In fact, I shall be raising a glass to you as New Year's Eve becomes January 1st. I shall say to John Keefe and his colleagues at Eurotunnel, good luck, mate. Well done.
You may see us on the television at that time, DP.
John, yeah, and thank you too. All the best to you. Thank you.
Cheers.
Well, Elizabeth, you've heard that. Do you think your members will be the wiser? Will they be ready?
So it's our members, and then it's all our members' customers who are going to need to be ready for it. What did impress me, many things impressed me about John and what he was saying, the preparations they put in place, is about the number of contingency measures which are going to be in place around Kent, particularly that check in HGV is ready for the border system. We know that Dover equally have been practicing and can clear queues, I think, of 4,500 vehicles in 12 hours. There's a Kent Resilience Forum looking at traffic in Kent. And then there's the prioritisation of, it's called fish and chicks. So live and fresh fish and day old chicks will be prioritised through the whole system as well. But the contingency measures are very important in case we're not ready. And I think it's unrealistic to expect everybody to be ready, but we're going to give it a good go.
That's 167 trucks an hour on a 24-hour basis. If I divide 4,000 by 24, I get 166. That is amazing. Every hour, on the hour. And some of those are going to go off to lorry parks, aren't they? I mean, some of them are going to fill all these parks. Or do you think these parks won't be used?
Yes, that's right. So Michael Gove wrote to industry saying we need to prepare. There were going to be mitigations in place. But if they were calculating that if 40 to 70% of trucks are not border ready, it could lead to queues of 7,000 in Kent. But the parking provision is around 8,500 spaces. And could be as much as nearly 12,000 spaces. But we don't want that to happen. That's going to be a huge deterrence. If it is needed, it will only be for a short period of time, because the incentive to get that paperwork ready will be massive. But we need the EU operators to know all about it, because they'll be making return journeys as well. So it's great as ready in the UK, but we need to get the messages out abroad.
Yeah, Elizabeth, for now, thanks very much. You're listening to Preparing for Brexit with me, Digby Jones, and this is Times Radio. Christine Wolfe runs her own company called Southeast Flowers. They aren't far from Dover and they use the port daily to get their freesias and their forsythias, their alliums and their agapanthus into the United Kingdom. From Christine's wholesale warehouse, the flowers are then sent out to florists and they end up as beautiful bouquets for weddings, for funerals and for functions throughout the county of Kent and beyond. Christine, welcome.
Thank you, Dixie.
Now, you've used, I think it's Dover, or is it the Channel Tunnel? Have you?
It's mainly the Channel Tunnel that the flowers come across on. If there's a problem in the Channel Tunnel, they come on the ferries. At times, like Stack, sometimes they go from the Hook to Harwich.
Oh, right. So you have choice.
There is a choice. Hook to Harwich is last case scenario. When we were operating through the last really bad Stack, they went from the Hook to Harwich, and then we had to hire a lorry and go up to Dartford and try and get the flowers, because otherwise we would have got them about 12 hours late.
Yeah. So, and when you use the word stack, listeners, will they imagine this is when they see all these Arctics lined up on the M20? Is that
absolutely
right?
Absolutely. Where we're situated in Ashford, we have to get our flowers into us first, then out to our customers, then we have to get the vans back in again. And it tends to be a bit of a nightmare. So Brexit, there's two or three different aspects of it that are worrying us. One of which is the logistics side and the roads.
Well, I can, Christine, I can help you today because I've got an expert here.
For you today.
Yeah, you're going to talk to a real person, and for you today, she's not cheap. She's actually free. And ask away, Christine.
One of the things I was talking to the guys yesterday, there's lots of jargon. There's the EORI number, there's Peach. Last year you had to register as a first port of call. I believe that's now changed and it has to be something else. We get flowers in every day that come through from Holland and Italy. I understand that we will be charged for the paperwork from this side, but I also understand we're going to get charged paperwork from the exporters as well. So that's a consideration, because obviously that's all got to go. We can't absorb anything. Our retailer works on very small margins, as you can imagine. But one of the things that happens with our flowers is that you've got multi-drop. Now, our transport company that we use has insisted that we all use the same agent. So that particular lorry, all the paperwork will be from the same agent, which makes sense.
Yeah.
But what happens if that lorry is stuck behind a lorry that hasn't got the right, correct paperwork?
Elizabeth?
Yeah, so I think that is just how life is. So you'll be potentially queuing. Remember, imports won't have those queues for 6 months and they won't have to have the same checks. So we're going to be letting imports in, doing the paperwork, doing the checks afterwards. Mm. So that is some hope for you. I'm also hoping that the ports, once you've arrived at the ports, begin to do that sorting out from the EU side online. But the hope I have to offer you today, which is something you may know about, but it's called the Local Haulier Permit Scheme.
I didn't know that.
Oh, okay. So Kent County Council, they've developed a scheme which allows Kent-based hauliers. So if you're in Dover, Folkestone, Hythe, Ashford, Canterbury, Thanet, Faversham, I think you can drive directly to the Eurotunnel entrance or the Port of Dover. On more local roads.
And Elizabeth, can I ask if Christine is reliant more on the import in, and she's got an extra 6 months really because the UK government are giving them 6 months, not Brussels. In that 6 months, what should she be doing to make sure that we're not having this conversation right now in 6 months' time?
So in those 6 months, there's going to be some information which we haven't got yet from HMRC, which will detail how she should be keeping records. So records still need to be kept. But what she can use the time for is familiarise herself with the new systems and new checks for import during that time. So she's got an extra period of preparation, and that was specifically in response to the big impact that COVID has been having on our economy. Kristen was talking about running with 50% of her staff, so that was purely in recognition from government about how very, very difficult it is at the moment.
And given that Christine, she didn't, and by the way, no reason why she should, she's been trying to keep all the balls and plates in the air with COVID. But given she didn't know what a local haulier permit was, and given that that is obviously going to be amazingly useful for her, I was finding it when you were talking about operation this and operation that. I thought I'd come in the middle of an Alistair MacLean war movie, and I'm confused, and I'm not Christine. So where does she go to find the answers to all these acronyms and jargon and all of that stuff?
There's the gov.uk information at the moment, but if she's in a trade association, they will be able to help you. And as she's already found, the customs agents, freight forwarders can also help. But there is a UK helpline launching soon as well from government. So there's a person you can speak to about this.
When would that helpline be launched, do you think?
I don't have the data. I was asking my team a couple of days ago if we had an update on that. I haven't got the date yet.
Mm. Anything else?
The main thing is kind of tying down exactly not only how long is everything going to be held up for. To be honest, we've just got to deal with it. Whatever happens, we are going to work probably 24 hours in advance until it settles down, so that we can, because you can't kind of put off a funeral. I mean, weddings aren't going ahead at the minute, but with funerals they are. So if we've got an order for a funeral, we can't actually say to them, well, the flowers are still stuck on the lorry, so we can't deliver it. So we will start working 24 hours in advance from probably the 30th until we can see it settling down. That might take a month, it might take 6 weeks, I've really no idea. But we have no choice but to kind of just deal with it, just get on with it. There's nothing we can do about it. So you've just got to look at what you've got in front of your face on that particular day and go for it. Yeah. With regard to the paperwork side of things, we can't do anything about that either, because if it gets to the port and the paperwork's not right, we can't do anything. As long as we're doing everything we can here, then that's the most important thing. So we'll just get on with that as well. On the charges and stuff, that's all got to... I've no idea how much it's going to cost, whether it's going to be a percentage, whether it's going to be a flat fee. I have had an email, to be fair, from the customs guy I spoke to yesterday, but I just haven't had time to look at it yet, which is a big problem for me on a daily basis. Passports, veto things, if we're importing plants, that's all a bit of a minefield, because the list is huge. And as you can imagine, there's thousands of different types of flowers we bring in. So it's a little bit of a minefield. If we didn't have COVID to deal with, maybe I could kind of take one day a week out and literally all I do is read up. That's the problem at the minute, is I'm actually having time to devote to everything.
And presumably you have competition, but competition will also be suffering the same issue. Yeah. Mm. So one hint I would give you is, if you could just spend a bit of time to get ahead of your competition, and get that plant in 24 hours earlier, a fresher flower means more sales, doesn't it?
I mean, if you haven't got it, you can't sell it. If you haven't got it, somebody else may have it. We've just got to be super organised, and we've got to make sure our customers are super organised. The only trouble is, and especially what I've seen happen this year, is everybody's buying hand-to-mouth. So because a lot of with the lockdowns, the shops haven't been open, they're not having the bank of flowers they would normally have for people to come in and choose. So therefore, the order comes in quite late, then the customer is trying to get the flowers for the next morning, And everybody is keeping as little stock as possible to be able to react, because it's perishable. So, you know, you've got to maintain your freshness so that you throw the least amount away as possible. And it goes all the way along the chain. The growers aren't growing as much because the demand's not there, and so on and so forth. Yeah. So you've got to kind of be organised, but your crystal ball isn't big enough.
Yeah, and actually, do you know, I'll tell you this, in about a year's time, we'll all have PhDs in hindsight, won't we?
Yeah, absolutely. absolutely.
Absolutely. Can I just thank you, Christine. And Christine Wolfe, it's just marvellous. Southeast Flowers, I wish you the very best. And let's just hope you do stay one day ahead of the competition. That sounds like to me an achievable aim. Get one day ahead of the competition.
Yeah.
And I wish you well. Elizabeth, we'll hear more of you in a moment, but for now, thank you. And you're listening to Preparing for Brexit with me, Digby Jones, here on Times Radio.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Rising sea levels, extreme weather patterns, extinctions of species. Our planet needs protecting. I'm Adam Vaughan, the environment editor for The Times, and this is Planet Hope from The Times, in partnership with Rolex and its Perpetual Planet Initiative. In this podcast, we hear from leading experts from around the world who are committed to finding solutions. These explorers, scientists, entrepreneurs, and citizens are committed to a common goal, to protect our home, Earth. Listen now wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Preparing for Brexit with me, Digby Jones, here on Times Radio. And we're looking at borders and getting goods across our borders. And still with me is Elizabeth de Jong from Logistics UK. Elizabeth, it's not just about Dover and Folkestone and Channel Tunnel, is it, all of this? It's a nationwide issue.
It's a nationwide issue and will be judged, I think, on queues at Dover and also whether or not shelves are stacked in Northern Ireland. And we've got specific concerns about Northern Ireland. It's got a high dependency on goods from Great Britain. So 2/3 of wholesale and retail goods in Northern Ireland are from Great Britain. And there's a potential to be an overwhelming numbers of customs and safety and security formalities and checks at a level that could deter trade to Northern Ireland. And also systems, infrastructure and information are not yet ready to support trade. And these all have to be ready by the 1st of January.
Well, let's see what that means in practice. Let's ask two people from two ends of the British Isles, actually. Sarah Hards from AM Next Day, all the way from Larne on the east coast of Northern Ireland. And also in Portsmouth on the south coast is Clive Broadley. He's chairman and director of a small haulage business there called Fraser Freight. Warm welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Sarah, let's start with you, actually. Tell me what you do at AM Next Day.
Sure. At AM Next Day, we are a haulage company. We have kind of two sides of the business. One is retail logistics. So that is collecting goods from GB, bringing them into Northern Ireland and distributing them throughout the north of Ireland and also the south for maybe about 6 or 7 different well-known retailers. We're also part of the Pallet Network. The Pallet Network is one of the large groupage networks in the UK and Ireland. We bring around 600 consignments in from GB each night and around 300 consignments out, so from Northern Ireland to GB every day.
600 pallets leave Northern Ireland and go to the UK every day with you?
Sorry, the other way around. 600 coming in from GB to Northern Ireland and probably 200 to 300 leaving Northern Ireland going into GB.
And they go into a hub, don't they?
Yes, it's a hub close to Birmingham and then out onward to kind of delivery depots.
Actually, Sarah, that was a rhetorical question. I knew they went to Birmingham, but I just like to hear my home city mentioned on national radio.
There you go.
Well done. And what's your actual role at AM Next Day?
I actually do sales. But in these kind of strange and weird times, COVID is presenting kind of a challenge to get face-to-face with people. And, you know, Brexit is ever pressing. This is a family business as well. So whatever kind of is different falls in my lap. So Brexit expert here also.
And what on 1st January, as far as you know, is going to change for you right now?
So leaving Northern Ireland is going to remain the same, which is good for us. Going to both GB and Ireland, hopefully. What's going to change for us is that the goods coming in from GB are going to be subject to the safety and security and customs declaration. At the moment, we're getting more information daily, which is making us feel slightly less nervous. The network that we're part of is offering a customs service to all of our customers bringing goods in from GB to NI free. So it's an added value service as part of that network, which is great to hear. So as long as the kind of IT systems are up and running from both the government side and our network, things should run smoothly.
Amazing.
However,
I don't think that'll be famous last words. I think they will run smoothly. You seem on top of it. Let's ask Clive Brody. Let's move from Northern Ireland. Let's get down to Portsmouth. And I was stationed there when I was in the Royal Navy. I was actually on a ship out of Portsmouth, so I know it reasonably well. I bet you're pleased to hear, Clive, what Sarah's just been saying, aren't you?
Yes, I am, and I trust the ship was not the Victory certificate.
Been on it many times.
yes, I was interested to know. Our own business is not particularly Northern Ireland-centric. We don't really consider goods for there. We're more interested in the European movements from our side of it. I mean, Fraser Freight is a medium-sized business, small to medium-sized business. We employ about 35. We turn over about 7 million. We're Jersey Post-owned. We are a traditional freight forwarder, so we move goods by air, sea, international road, import-export. And we operate a fleet, which is our real interest in this debate. We operate a fleet of 12 HGVs, and our prime routes are to Italy, France, Netherlands, and one or two other EU destinations.
Yeah, I'm going to take full advantage of this right now, because I'm chairman of some 6 companies, and every single one of them at some point or another uses freight forwarding. And our worry, not yet been proved, so it's not an accusation, but our worry is that our freight forwarders, and they're all different ones, by the way, and they're different businesses, but they'll all say, oh, it's far more difficult than it used to be. Bang, up goes the price. And we're worried about it. Set my mind at rest. Tell me I'll sleep easy at night.
You may sleep easy at night if your main concern are goods coming in from current non-EU destinations. That isn't going to change too much. So if your freight forwarder is set up for import clearances and dealing with the trade coming in through what we call the deep sea ports, Southampton, Felixstowe, in the main, that's going to be unaffected. The concern that freight forwarders and hauliers have got is around the border. And whilst you said earlier, maybe it's different for different parts of the country, that's not necessarily the case, because the pinch point is going to end up being Dover, the Channel, Portsmouth to some extent, and what we call the non-inventory ports, the ports that are not currently directly linked to the customs system. And therefore, freight forwarders and hauliers are going to have to learn new practices. And our concern there is that information is still very short. Literally before this meeting, I attended an HMR briefing for the software houses for the new goods movement, vehicle movement system that they're introducing. And it's clearly not ready. There's no test environment. We have 21 working days left before the end of the year. And we have Christmas in the middle of that, Black Friday, end of year rushes, and COVID. So the opportunity to prepare for it is really difficult for hauliers. Some are well prepared. We've done a lot of work as a company, but it's not just preparing the hauliers themselves, it's preparing the customers at the same time. Because if the customers don't do that, the hauliers
if the customers don't help or play ball, then the cost will go up, is what you're saying. Yeah. And if they're on the ball and they're doing their bit, and government, who say it'll be ready in time, you and I could be a tad cynical about that, but let us assume they're right. Am I allowed to think that as long as the customer's doing their bit, as long as government's done its bit, freight forwarding will not put up, by and large, the price of doing all this?
I think not in terms of standard practice. The risk area is going to be if there's congestion. The problem's going to be at the port is if they do not have the right software running and working, if they cannot link to the new systems, if they do not get the paperwork right, the vehicle cannot move. If it moves and it's carrying groupage loads, for example, it only requires one groupage load not to have its customs documents in order, and that vehicle will be turned around.
And by groupage load, you mean lots of things from lots of places, do you?
Yes. So it falls into two categories, really. You get what we call full loads. I'm talking about our heavy goods vehicles. You get full loads, which are not so bad. They're dedicated. It's one customer, one sort of goods probably, one single clearance, and that's less of an issue. But much of the trade travelling to and from the EU are what we call groupage loads, run by groupage operators. So on that trailer, they may have a dozen or more separate loads for different customers, all of which will require a customs entry. And if it doesn't get permission to progress, it can't get onto the ferry. If it hasn't got customs arrangements set up both sides of the channel, it cannot progress. And that's the big worry. So for a haulier like ourselves, we depend on a quick flow of our vehicles. We particularly home in on Italy. That's one of our big markets. We can turn round a truck, so it will go out on a Monday. It will be back by the weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. We turn it around, it goes out again on the Monday. So that's a 6-7 day turnaround. If it can't do that, and it goes to a 10-day turnaround, we've got 3 extra running days with no income.
So your price goes up.
Yes, and if it's driver accompanied and the driver can't move, you're then into night out payments and demurrage, and that can be £200-300 a day.
So the answer to my question is, get your paperwork done in advance and use the smart stuff and
absolutely.
The IT stuff. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
But hauliers have got to work very closely with their customers.
Customer base,
And that's what we've been doing. We've been running PowerPoint since 2018, We've been running PowerPoint presentations. And
Sarah, this is radio, not television. But if it was television, I'd have seen you nodding at that point, would I?
Oh, very much so. What's key here is the sharing of information with, you know, everyone from, you know, kind of professionals in the industry with different customers. We've kind of set up numerous, you know, webinars and meetings over the past 2 years as well, just to try and get as much information out as possible. And that's key, getting everyone prepared. But as Clyde said, it could be, you know, madness at the ports. We deal with groupage, as I said, daily. I think on our trailers, there's maybe 50 different consignments. You're looking at 50 different MRN numbers, you know, and details for 50 different pallets. If one of those is just ever so slightly out, that's that, you know, it's kind of segregated and not allowed to enter the port.
Yeah, I see one problem for both of you, actually, is that you are reliant for your reputation and indeed your money, as you, Clive, was just clearly explaining, on the customer getting it right.
Absolutely. I think so. Yeah. And I are aligned on this. If the customer doesn't get it right, and it's part of our job to help educate the customer. Mm-hmm. But some are easier to educate than others, is the truth of it.
Yeah. And
if
it sounds to me,
side of life, you don't maybe have that same relationship with the customer.
No. And it sounds to me that HMG and Northern Ireland probably got that in a better place with a few weeks to go than they have for you in Portsmouth. Am I understanding that correctly? Sarah seemed a bit more optimistic that it's all going to work.
I'm more optimistic after a phone call I had this morning. However, that may change tomorrow because the information we're fed daily kind of does change. And the system that we're going to be using for everything trading in and out of Northern Ireland is the Trader Support Service, the TSS. That that, although there is information online, it won't be up and running until the 21st of December. So again, like the new CDS system, there'll be very little time to test that and see how it works and if it's compatible with different software that our customers may have. Yeah.
And Clive?
Yes, we're not so involved with the TSS system, but I was reading up on it, Sarah, and I think if goods are coming out of Northern Ireland, it's pretty trouble-free, isn't it? And crossing the borders out of Southern Ireland into Northern Ireland is fairly free of tariffs and barriers. But going back in, if people, again, are not joined up on the TSS and haven't registered, I guess that's going to cause you some problems?
Yeah, I think that we are kind of, I feel like a salesperson for the TSS the past few weeks. I've been pushing my customers towards it. I must be getting some sort of commission from them, hopefully. But basically we are pushing them in that direction. And if everyone kind of is on board with that, who's trading with Northern Ireland, it should make things ever so slightly more seamless. Fingers crossed.
Well, let me share with both of you. One of my companies, I was talking to him this morning, talking to the dispatch manager this morning, but I mentioned who I was going to be talking to today. And he said, every time I ask government, when's this going to come out? I get Ken being told next Sunday.
Yeah.
And Well, I'm hearing a lot. So, yes. And he said, every week I'm told it's next Sunday. And so I from that laughter, Sarah, I guess I've found a common thread there, have I?
Definitely. It seemed to be, you know, that there was a deadline of each Sunday night was the deadline that we would hear of what this agreement for us was going to be. And we would have more clarity. That's what I said every week. I say to my customers, we'll catch up next week and we'll know exactly where we're going to be and we'll know how to proceed. And no doubt there we have a little bit more information, but just not, you know, not enough to kind of give everyone certainty to say trade is going to continue fairly similarly to as it does right now. So,
well, Sarah Hards from AM Next Day in Larne in Northern Ireland, and to Clive Broadley, chairman of Fraser Freight down there in Portsmouth, to both of you, thank you for your time, and I wish you well. It's a minefield, and from what I've heard, you're both supremely qualified to navigate your customers through it. So good luck. Thanks very much for joining me.
Thank you very much. Bye, Sarah.
Still with me is Elizabeth de Jong from Logistics UK. Well, Elizabeth, what did you think of that then?
Oh, I feel so bad because I'm really still concerned about Northern Ireland, Great Britain's trade. So I probably know too much about what's ready and what isn't for Northern Ireland. But I'm delighted from Sarah that the trader support system service is really helping her. But we don't have any comprehensive business guidance on what's going to happen for trade between Great Britain and Northern Ireland yet. We don't have any operational guidance. There's still some political discussions to happen there. The infrastructure for SPS checks is not ready at Larne, Belfast, Warren Ports. It's not begun construction.
What's SPS
it won't be
mean?
Ready. It's the sanitary and phytosanitary checks.
Well, of course it is. Why didn't I know that?
The goods movement vehicle service. Yes, Clive, we won't need it for things coming from Great Britain until July, but we need it for the 1st of January for Northern Ireland, and it's not fit for purpose as yet.
Elizabeth, just walk us all through the trader support scheme. What's that?
So that is advice and guidance and also digital service that is there for people who are trading with Northern Ireland or based in Northern Ireland as well. So they're going to help you and give you advice and hold your hand through the transition as well.
And how can somebody get hold of that?
So that is advertised. You would just need to almost Google trader support service.
And is that for somebody who's selling into there as well as someone who's buying off there?
Absolutely. People selling into there, very important. Right. They're running webinars and what they're doing, but they will also want to talk to you personally too and get you to register for it. But we're asking for mitigations for Northern Ireland and hoping we can deliver some of those. So truck level rather than consignment level declarations. for these sanitary and phytosanitary checks. Also safety and security declarations, so you don't need one for each parcel. Some of our members are taking 5,000 parcels per truck, and that's a lot of different entries that they need to do per truck.
And that's not Northern Ireland. You're saying that's going out of anywhere?
So specifically into Northern Ireland, because of the volumes going into Northern Ireland are of concern to us. So we're hoping we're getting a breakthrough. And you're telling me everything is announced on Sunday, so I will look forward to hearing. Yeah.
And by the way, you're entitled to say which Sunday, I think. Now, if you've ever been lucky enough to own a beautiful sports car and you want to get it down to, shall we say, southern Spain, and you don't want to put any more miles on your classic car's clock, well, for one thing, of course, you'd be incredibly lucky. But you also might want to employ the services of my next guest. David Rogers runs a specialist haulage company, E.M. Rogers, and that transports cars all across Europe, not just down to southern Spain. Indeed, takes a lot of Range Rovers and the like up to the Arctic Circle. David also not only runs a successful business, but I've known him for years. He's a good friend of mine. And when I was putting this series together, I thought, here is a man who knows the borders and the problems backwards. And what's more, as you know, I've tried very hard that it's regardless whether you supported Remain or Brexit in this. This is not about the politics. This is not about the referendum. This is about we're here, we're now, we're weeks away. How can business learn to get the job done on January the 1st at the end of transition? David was a Remainer. He and I used to have huge arguments about it over a bottle of wine. I'm so proud of the way that he just got hold of the business after the referendum result and said, right, well, we're here, got to get on with it, let's make it happen. So I thought it'd be ideal today. So, David, you're welcome.
Hello, Digby. Thank you for inviting me on this.
You take these cars up to the Arctic Circle. You take them down to the deserts of North Africa. Yes. What percentage goes through the EU?
Well, the whole lot, everything. So,
the whole lot. You
know, so when we go up to the Arctic Circle, we'll go on a ferry from Immingham to Gothenburg, and it's a three-day drive all through Sweden up into northern Sweden, up into the Arctic Circle. They'll test the cars there for various things like tyres and brakes and all sorts of things. Our drivers will stay up there maybe for a week or 10 days and then they'll bring the cars back. And then a continuous thing like this, and any sort of during the winter months, any sort of 1 week, we'd have 10 to 12 trucks every week up in the Arctic Circle. We're only sort of 5 weeks away from the end of the transition period, and it is a worry really to all of us transport guys. We still really don't know quite what's happening. The nearest thing we've done in the last few weeks is to apply for ECMT permits, which are the permits that we need to go into all of the European countries. And I spoke to, funny enough, today, the local RHA international office, and there is only 2,088 ECMT permits, which are permits you need to sort of go into Europe, being allocated. And there's about 12,000 regular users of trucks going into Europe every sort of week or every month. So there's going to be a massive shortfall. So probably what we can see is, say, we send 50 or 60 trucks every week. Now, if we're only allocated sort of half that amount of permits, say 25 to 30 permits if we're lucky, you know, we're going to have trucks that technically can't go into Europe. So can I just
understand that, David? So you're handling about 60 of your own trucks every week.
Yes.
Leaving the UK, taking cars all over Europe, and because each truck individually needs a permit, as opposed to the business needs a permit, you're going to have half your fleet idle.
There's certainly a possibility, and also, you know, we'll have customers calling us and saying, "Can we do extra trucks, say, to Italy or Austria or wherever it might be?" And we'll say, "Well, look, you know, we'd love to, but unfortunately we haven't got the permits to be able to do that."
And how do you get hold of extra permits? I mean, what lever needs to be thrown somewhere to get the permits that business needs?
Well, that is a problem, really. And say there's only 2,000 odd permits being issued, and one permit per truck.
But why have there only a few permits? Why not loads more?
Well, apparently that's all that Europe is allocating.
So what we've got to do is get hold of somebody in the negotiation team and say, make sure in the negotiation that we get the number of permits we need.
I'm personally hoping there's going to be some sort of deal done. I know it's sort of like the 11th hour as it is at the moment, but I just feel it'll be mitigated quite a lot, and possibly permits won't be needed if a deal is done, you know. So that would make a massive interest for us, you know.
If a deal is done and that permit's not needed, you still need more and different paperwork, don't you?
Yes, you do. And, of course, we're relying on, you know, everything that goes, and I'm sure you've been discussing it already, but, you know, everything that goes across into Europe and into Ireland will need T-forms or ATA carnets and this sort of thing, which is extra paperwork for offices to do. And you're also relying on customers, you know, presenting with the right documentation. You know, I can go back long enough to sort of prior to 1992, where we'd have trucks sort of stuck at Dover, you know, certain entries hadn't been made, and, you know, your truck is stuck there because you might have 20 consignments on a trailer and two haven't cleared customs because the proper paperwork isn't in. So that's a real problem as well.
Where do you see the business in 6-9 months' time? Do you see this as sorted out?
Well, I think it's a difficult question, really, because we don't really know. It's almost like this COVID thing, you know. Did we expect COVID to last as long as it did? And probably the answer is no, we didn't. How much has it affected us? And we're probably 25% down in turnover of what we were prior to March of this year. I think it will affect business initially, transport business, a great deal. Even just through, you know, I was talking about earlier on lack of permits and that sort of thing. But another thing is, you know, if 10% increase on duty comes into the UK, a Scania or a Volvo truck that we actually buy roughly costs £100,000. Add 10% to that, another £10,000. We buy 15 to 18 new trucks every year. So you can see that straight away off the bottom line, another £150,000, £180,000, you know.
So, and that means fewer people employed and less tax paid, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Yeah, it does.
David, we'll call it a day there. And just to say thanks for giving me some time, and it's lovely to see you, mate. You take care.
Well done. Pleasure, thank you. Bye-bye now.
Well, Elizabeth, you're still with me, and you heard that there's a man who knows his subject. What did you think of that?
Yes, well, so David should be hearing at the beginning of December if he gets a permit. And
not another Sunday.
Another Sunday. So vital, he can't continue his business without it. The assurance that I can give him from government is that there's going to be a glide path to whatever new reciprocal arrangements there could be in place if it is not part of a trade deal. And also they're confirming bilateral deals to try to circumnavigate this permit system. But yes, there are far, far too few permits for us to be able to continue to take our vehicles abroad and continue our businesses.
I'm not going to hold you to this, but what do you think the chances are of there being enough permits?
We know there's not enough permits, so we know there needs to be another system. It's almost one company in four, and then it's only for one lorry.
So how are we going to get more permits? I mean, it seemed to me that this is absolutely vital to these businesses. So what are we going to do about it?
So generally, we're hoping to the trade deal. So they've got bigger issues on fishing and the level playing field, and we're hoping it will come through a trade deal. If not, it will be needing to be country-to-country bilateral deals. The people who run the permit scheme feel more kindly disposed to Britain than they have thus far.
If you look at the whole programme today, and thank you for joining me on it, and what are your takeaways? You know, what do you think, good and bad, from all the businesses that we've heard from?
Oh, it's been such an in-depth and illuminating look at Brexit preparedness and such differences in the people who you've spoken to. So John, with his huge business, ultimately prepared, €47 million spent on it, real confidence from him. And then Christine, completely focused on the day-to-day. She can't hold additional stock in the flour company. She can't prepare as she's so hit by COVID. Sarah from Northern Ireland, very positive, finding help from the government TSS service to help her. And Clive, a really pragmatic approach as well.
Elizabeth, everything you've heard, listeners to this will be saying, well, but where do I go? You know, how do I find this out in the next few weeks? Where can I learn and what do I do? Where would you recommend that people actually, after this programme, go online or make a call? Where would they be?
So it is all at gov.uk/transition, all the information we have. It's not all available yet. If you're part of a trade association, they will be able to help you. Logistics UK is helping our members. If you can contact a customs agent or a freight forwarder, you can contact the Trader Support Service if you're in Northern Ireland, or you can go to an information point. There's 45 around the country for motorway services centres as well. And there will be a UK helpline launching soon, but see if you can do some of your own work before then.
Are you personally hopeful, or are you concerned that we're entering into a nightmare? Is your glass half full, half empty?
I'm always a half-full person, but I like to think I'm realistic. So there will be a period where this needs to settle. However prepared we think we are by having read instruction manuals and seen what we're meant to be doing, we won't know until it really goes live. But our industry is immensely flexible. It's resilient. It wants to meet the needs of its customers. So it will adapt and deliver.
I've learned such a lot in the last hour. And Elizabeth de Jong, from Logistics UK, just to say a huge thank you to you. You've really shone a light on it for me as well.
Thank you.
Now, we've heard from some of our guests on the programme about a number of big issues that are still outstanding, although the end of transition is just a few weeks away. They include whether computer software is up and running, whether various permits have been issued, whether the setup at the ports in Northern Ireland are ready for those food imports. We've invited a government minister onto the programme in a couple of weeks' time so that we can actually get some answers. So please tune in then. It should be interesting. My thanks to all my guests today, particularly to Elizabeth de Jong from Logistics UK for setting out the context and commenting on all of my guests and their specific problems. At the end of this series, we're going to hold a special programme where we're going to bring together many of the themes that we've been discussing, a wrap-up if you like. And if you've been listening, and if you've any question about any part of it, there'll be a special panel there to answer your questions. So please send them to me. Email them at studio@times.radio. Now, in the next episode of Preparing for Brexit, we're going to talk the three Fs. We're going to talk about food, about farming, and about fishing. And how are things going to change for businesses who put the meals on our plates and who earn an amazing amount of foreign exchange for our country by exporting food to the European Union. I do hope you can join me then. And in the meantime, thank you again for joining me on Preparing for Brexit with me, Digby Jones, here on Times Radio.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.